Are we good? Grace, shall I begin?
So at 10 o'clock, I gotta step out of this farm call.
I'll just plan a first break around 10, or just when I see, if I forget and I see you get up, yeah. I'll proclaim a break, okay?
Yeah.
Good morning. Is my sound okay? Okay. My name is Bill Jeter. I'm the Value Adjustment Board attorney. This is the 2022 Value Adjustment Board Special Magistrate Orientation. I'd like to welcome all of you on behalf of the Value Adjustment Board and the staff of the Value Adjustment Board. I would like to take a minute to do some housekeeping. It's going to be a few minutes, actually. We have a lot of housekeeping things, but I'll start by confirming that each special magistrate should have a packet with this cover sheet, which is entitled Special Magistrate Orientation. You should also have a set of uniform policies and procedures manuals. You should have a form of the 2022 a professional services agreement for special magistrates, a W-9 form, and a copy of the DR-485V, which is the what I call the cover sheet for value petitions, value recommended decisions. To address the employment contract, you may, if you wish, fill in data. There's a place in the middle of the contract for your contact information so that we can reach out to you when needed. And you may go ahead and sign this and return it today so that we can have it. Or if you prefer to go back and read through it or let your lawyer look at it, whatever you want to do, that's fine too. But we will need to have it back before we can schedule you for any hearings. So also with the W-9, please be sure that the W-9 identifies you or the entity to which payment is to be made. Is that if they are an individual special magistrate, but payment is to be made to their corporation, is that okay? And they just identify the corporation. Is that how it works, Grace?
You have to check with Heather, but as long as nothing has changed since you previously filled one out, then you don't need to do one.
Okay, for those of you who've been with us before, you don't even have to do a W-9 unless there have been changes. So if everybody has those handouts, then we shall discuss. I'm going to address my attention to this orientation package first, and you'll see that page one lists our staff. We have a new Value Adjustment Board clerk this year. Dr. Cheryl Brown retired last year, and in April, Margaret Sidman was engaged by the City Council as its new secretary. By statute, the secretary of the governing body of the county is the clerk of the Value Adjustment Board, and so as part of her duties as secretary to the council, Peggy Sidman is the new clerk to the board. Peggy is an attorney. She has a lot of government experience. She represented the city council. She's been with the general counsel's office. I think she's going to bring a lot of depth and legal perception, and we need all the help we can get on that. So, and I think you'll like her. She's a gracious and interesting person. We have this year, Heather Pellegrin continues as the VAB operations manager, and Jonathan Griffiths will continue on her staff. Grace English, who's been with us for some years and we've all grown to love, is now going to be teaching eighth grade beginning on Monday. Is it eighth grade generally or eighth grade English?
Eighth grade English.
And so we're very excited that with the need we have for teachers, and I know she will be good, which means she'll be sorely missed for sure. That is your staff, and you'll also see on page one, there's lots of contact information for your staff, website information for VAB, contact information for me, and also a link to the Government and the Sunshine Law, which as we'll talk about this more, I believe, but VAB as a quasi-judicial entity is subject to Florida's Government and the Sunshine Law and its public records law. So those records which you maintain as part of your job are public records and are susceptible to the public review. And also you must become familiar with the Government and the Sunshine Law and be sure that you do not discuss case matters with others off the record and do not otherwise violate the provisions of the Sunshine Law. We'll try and talk about that more. And if anybody ever has any questions, please let me know. On page three is a list of the special magistrates we have this year. And I'm going to ask in a minute that you introduce yourselves. But first, by way of background here, I just want to say we're going to aspire to complete this orientation today before noon, really by 11:30 if we can, so that everybody will be able to get on their afternoon business agenda. I will break for a few minutes at the top of each hour, but certainly you don't have to wait for me to break. If you come and go as you please, if you need to make a phone call or you need to do something else for a minute, that's understood. Just come and go. But I will be breaking on an hourly basis. At this point, I was wondering if each special magistrate would stand and introduce yourself. I'd like you to say who you are, what type special magistrate you are, and in terms of not in terms of good or bad, in terms of whether you're a residential real property valuation or commercial valuation or an attorney or tangible personal property. And if there's something that you'd like to tell us about yourself, please do. Okay.
What's the thing to do?
All right, I'm going to pick on you. I'm going to start with you. Do you have to take that call, or shall I start elsewhere? Okay. There's microphones placed about, and there's a button on the top. You need to make sure the green light is on. But if you'll get a microphone as your turn comes and introduce yourself. Alex, if you'll begin with that microphone to your right.
Want to say something?
Yeah, I'd like you to introduce yourself.
My name is Alex Rudin. I'm a tangible personal property appraiser, among other things. Well, that's what I'm a special magistrate here for. But I'm also a BB guy of sorts and a real estate guy of sorts. But I'm here for tangible personal property.
My name is Bud Laurier. I'm a commercial and residential real estate special magistrate. And I've been at this, I think, for about 12 years.
Do you want us to use the microphone for the public record,
yes,
or was that just so people could hear us?
No, those microphones that are in front of you, I would appreciate everybody using, making sure they're on, and use them when you speak. As you can see, the camera has sort of a limited panorama, and so if anybody chooses, if they're going to be speaking, if they'd like to come to the podium, then they'll be on the video, but the audio is going to pick you up so long as you use the microphone. So if that helps.
You can tell I've served on city boards before. My name is John McGowan. I'm an attorney, and basically my practice is business law and government affairs, but I'll be an attorney special magistrate. Now it won't turn off.
And I'm Jonathan Smith. I'm also an attorney special magistrate, and I practice mostly in real estate area.
This one's dangerous. I'm Pam Andrea, and I'm tangible personal property.
Okay. So, Caleb, have you got access to a microphone?
Yes. So I'm Caleb Hollis. I've been a magistrate here for about 10 or 11 years. I have a wife, 4 kids, all teenagers. Pray for me.
Thank you. Austin Hollis, special magistrate, commercial, residential, approximately 12 years.
Reg Carter, real property, tangible personal property. I don't remember when I started, but I do remember that I had a 36 waist and a full head of hair.
Well, they just took the microphone from the podium.
Oh, no.
So if you pass it down here, I can give it to you. Because that's what I understand, what happens when you come to the podium. So again, good morning, everybody. 1, 2, 1, 2. You all can hear me. And the camera can see me. And please hold the applause and remain seated. My name is Joseph Haynes Davis, and I'm an attorney special magistrate. As you can see, I'm better at being an attorney special magistrate than a comedian. But this is my first time being an attorney special magistrate here in the great county of Duval. And I've been an attorney special magistrate here in the great state of Florida since 2008. And this year, I've been appointed to 26 counties. And I'm a general practice. As they say sometimes, counsel, it's what comes through the door sill or the threshold law. So I thank you all for listening to me, and let's have at it this year. Thank you so much.
Very good.
Well, welcome to Duval County. That can go to Mr. Mullen, actually.
He has one.
But he does. Okay.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Hank Mullen. I'm a residential special magistrate, and this is my eighth year.
Okay, thank you very much. And, of course, I encourage y'all, if you need to confer with one another without getting into specifics of a case, if there are general questions or things like that, we're all in this together. Certainly, I encourage you to contact me first, but if you need an appraiser consultation, everybody here is willing to help. I think everybody has assisted, for example, in matters of AXIA operation, the procedures of getting some of these recommendations of record. Sometimes you'll just have operational issues or computer questions, and everybody reaches out and helps one another. This is a good group. We also have some observers with us today. I think everybody over there is with the Property Appraiser's Office. The Honorable Jerry Holland is here as property appraiser. And Mr. Holland, would you like to introduce your group? And if each one will say what area they work in, or if you'll tell us in your introduction, I'll let you handle it, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Jeter. Jerry Holland, Duval County Property Appraiser, and I'll pass the mic around so they can introduce.
Tiffany Pinkstaff, I'm with the Office of General Counsel, and I'm the attorney for the Property Appraiser's Office.
Keith Hanks, Chief Appraiser.
Robert Lytle, Commercial Group Manager.
Keith Hall,
Commercial Group Manager.
Harry Guffman, Commercial Division Chief.
Good morning, Sage Sullivan, TPP Division Chief.
Justin Jicalone, Exemption Compliance Division Chief.
David Bowley, Residential Division.
Jim Ockner, Residential Division Chief.
Larry C., Residential.
We're going to move the microphone back up here to the podium, but if anybody has anything to say and doesn't have a mic, you can come up here, or I'll bring that mic to you. Would like to just remind everybody of the special magistrates that you must complete the Value Adjustment Board training. You must provide the Value Adjustment Board staff a certificate that you completed the training, and if applicable, that you passed the DOR test. And also, you have to register with the DOR separately from notifying the VAB that you have taken the training. If you look on page 3 of the packet I gave you, this is a sample from last year, from 2021. I couldn't find that they had started their list for 2022, but you can just see this is how your name will end up in 2022, so long as you notify. I think it's a very generic address, training at floridarevenue.com or something. It's in the book. But notify them with a copy of your certificate of completion or of receiving the training, as the case may be, so that you can appear on this list. Because I will, as part of the due diligence that I have to do as VAB attorney, we will check to make sure each of you has submitted your training certificate, and also that you're on the registry of the Department of Revenue. Also, I may have this date wrong, but I believe it's November 24th. All of the property appraiser licenses expire. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but each of you needs to provide us your renewal, a copy of your renewed license, as soon as possible. Unless I'm mistaken, I only have one of those so far. But we will need that. It's important, and it's going to affect whether we can schedule you for hearings if we don't have that renewal, because obviously you may be current when you hear petition, but if you're not current when you submit your recommendation, which could be later, then you know that may raise would raise legal problems for us. So please do be mindful of that, and please notify VAB as soon as you fulfill those requirements. This year, I'm pleased to say that the board is raising your hourly rate to $120 per hour, and so each of you will receive that. You'll be able to bill for your time spent today. Please do submit an invoice for your time. That invoice form, which most of you are familiar with, appears on page 4. And you can get a fillable version of that from the VAB website or from VAB staff if you don't have one. But they like for you to bill them at least once every 2 weeks so that they can keep up with your time. And you are billed, you are allowed to bill for your time today, for your time spent at hearings. We ask that if you are in a downtime between hearings and you're going to bill that time, that you spend it working on your recommendations or, you know, just gathering up whatever you do. But we'd like that to be productive time, and the VAB will pay you for it. Then on residential recommendations, we allot 3 allowable hours for each residential recommendation. For commercial and TPP, 4 allowable hours on each recommendation. In the event you get a packet of, Mr. Rudin was just telling me he got a packet last year that had 3,000 pages of evidence. I suspect some of you have had evidence that rivals that or maybe even exceeds that. But you should be able to recognize that you are going to need more time than the allotted time. And we ask that you notify VAB staff, Heather, that you have received something that you believe warrants increased time, and then she submits, either makes the decision herself or submits it to the clerk. But I have, so far, never known anybody to be turned down on one of those requests. So, you will receive enough time. There are certain requirements that the law makes of you and that I'm going to ask of you, and so we want to be sure you have enough time to do that job professionally and that you're compensated for that time. But remember, ask up front. Don't just send a bill without having at least let us know ahead of time. This year, hearings will be either telephonic or in person. And that's sort of back to normal. We've always had a procedure in place. If somebody asked for a telephonic hearing, that they could have that, and it's according to the rules that are in your training. So that should not be anything too much different from you. AXIA is still our program, our go-to program this year, and so we'll all be working within the AXIA system. We would appreciate feedback from you if you find things aren't working or if you're having issues with AXIA, because we have issues with it. And so, we certainly understand if you do, and we would appreciate your touching base with us. And if we can't answer your question, we'll maybe find another special magistrate because it's interesting with AXIA. I don't get the same screens. I don't get the same prompts. I don't have the same work as you do. So you'll ask me a question sometimes, and I just can't visualize it. And so it may take another special magistrate to work you through some of those. Same is true with staff, although they have a master overview of everything. They may be able to assist you, but certainly we'll try. Talking about AXIA, staff has asked me to bring to your attention that we've given you each a cover sheet for a DR-485V. That's the required sheet for a value decision from the Department of Revenue. The reason that's included among your materials is this. There have been issues with AXIA when the property appraiser gives their initial figures, the trim numbers, at the beginning of the hearing. Of course, the property appraiser goes first, and the first thing they do is say this is what the trim numbers were, and then they indicate if there have been any changes made since trim. That's something that has to be recorded because it has to end up ultimately on the final DR-485V, and staff has to have that information so that they can prepare reports at the end of the year. AXIA has not measured up, or else we haven't figured it out in certain respects, and some of these numbers do not report on AXIA, even when you input them into the AXIA system. Some of the trim numbers and some of the property appraiser changes numbers, even if you put them into the system at your computer desk at your office, don't fit in the system. So this is what my request is. Each hearing you will be provided, and the staff will show you where they are, DR-485Vs, and we ask that you manually, when the property appraiser announced, first you would put the petition number so we know which number it is, but then manually indicate the values that the property appraiser gives you for value before trim notice. Just manually fill that column in, and then if the property appraiser has made any changes, manually fill that in. If not, so indicate. Just with arrows, it's the same, or no change, however you want to do it. And then when you leave, please give that manually filled in sheet to VAB staff. That way they have a cross check and they know that they are using the figures that you received at the hearing. It's just, actually, it's just not getting it done for us, and so that's why, that's what that's all about.
I have a question.
Sir.
What are you going to do when you have 50 of them? Suppose you get 50 and one petitioner's representative is handling 50 matters. Do you want us to do 50 of these? I'm checking that. It's a little difficult, I think.
Well, as a practical matter, I would assume that the property appraiser does not give you 50 verbal values. The property appraiser in that scenario would probably have a table set up as part of his evidence and give it to you. Has that not been your experience? I mean,
I've had 50 of them read to me.
Well, if that's the case, I'm going to ask you to do it for all 50 of them, I guess. I hope that, you know, or if you want to, if you want to stop the hearing for a minute and consult with staff and say, here's my situation, and I want to comply with your request, what works best for you, VAB staff? And I think they'll come in and maybe one of them will take notes. I just can't speak for them because right now, as you know, with Grace leaving, they're going to be shorthanded maybe for a little while. But I know that staff would like to have an independent statement, and perhaps the property appraiser may come in and hand you something, you know, for each one of these. I don't know. With 50, that would probably save time for everybody, but it's up to the property appraiser how they present their cases. But ask staff if you feel like it's too cumbersome for you to do what I just requested. Pamela?
I think that everyone wants them on a record, so it usually is verbal, and it's all read in, right? Who does the initial input, though? Is that the PA is supposed to do the initial input, or the VAB?
Well, what happens is this. You hold the hearing.
No, before it goes to hearing. Who puts it into the AXIA system?
It's not in there.
Oh, so there's nothing.
I mean, at least from our standpoint,
okay.
As part of the special magistrate hearing, the property appraiser announces for each parcel the trim values and any changes that were made. And so that, and if you note that and go back to your office and put that number into AXIA, there's some glitch that is preventing that number from finding its way to VAB. Therefore, VAB is asking you, in addition to putting it in, to do this DR-485V so that, and hand it to them on your way out the door, so that if it glitches, they've got this.
Because a lot of other counties that I work in, they already had that number is already in AXIA's system.
But see, as I told you, I don't see those windows.
That's why I'm asking that.
TPP, both of you are TPP, and I know you will get, if AT&T, they may have hundreds of things. So you may be a different approach. If you would take both your the TPP, the three TPP people, if you would address staff and just tell them that you want to comply, but there's some logistical issues and what's the best way to handle it, y'all may be able to come up with a way. I share with you what they asked me, but you raise very good questions, and I know they don't want to impose undue burdens, but they also don't want to be. That what happens is if it glitches, they have to follow up with you, and then you have to go find it, and it's would be easier, they think, to do it the way I propose.
Okay.
But don't hesitate. If you've got a better idea, that's great. We're receptive to that. Okay. Let's go forward in the materials and. I'm now on page 5, and these are some facts I shared with the Value Adjustment Board, many of them gleaned from the property appraiser's report on the 2021 tax roll. If you go to the property appraiser's website, and then on his opening page, there is a 2021 report. For those among you who love data and statistics, the property appraiser has assembled a vast array of information just about the tax system in general, the tax system in Florida, numbers for each county. It's very interesting. Much of my data I took from there, but I'll let you peruse it at your leisure. What I ask that you take away from it is that property taxes form a substantial portion of both the school board and the city of Jacksonville's budgets. This is what your job is very important, because you are what enables everybody, hopefully, to feel they got a fair shake in the valuation of properties that leads up to these ultimate taxes. I have found, and I suspect many of you have found, is that most people, even though everybody gripes about taxes, most people recognize that taxes are a reality, and they want to pay taxes if they have to, but they want to pay their fair share. And I contend every year, and anytime anybody will listen, that the Value Adjustment Board and the special magistrates are John Q. Public's and Jane Q. Public's best device for making a difference in government. And you can go to city council meetings and ask them to reduce their budget and reduce taxes. You can go to the school board and do the same thing, and they'll give you your time and they'll listen to you, and you may make a difference. It happens. But it's less likely that you're going to make a difference there than you are with your own property as John Q. and Jane Q. Public, because you know your property, you know what you think it's worth, and you, if you feel that it's assessed improperly, you want to be able to correct that. And the Value Adjustment Board works. People achieve corrections, and even people who don't get reductions, if we do our job properly, feel like they got a fair hearing and got due process, and so they feel like the system works. They don't feel like the system is stacked against them. We typically have, in the last few years, have had around 3,000 petitions filed, but only 200 to 300 have gone to hearing. That bespeaks, I think, a successful effort by the property appraiser to either explain how they arrived at the assessments that the petitioners are complaining of, or working compromises if the parties agree that's appropriate. When we have 370,000 parcels of land in Duval County, around 3,000, which is less than 1% of those end up as petitions, and then about 1% of those end up actually going to hearing. So that means that as the system has progressed, most people have for whatever reason determined that they're not going to pursue their objections to the taxes, and that I think in my way of thinking is they've talked to somebody and worked it through, or they've had it explained to them. But when it does get to a contested hearing, then it's up to you and me to be sure that the recommended decisions that are prepared and which go before the board are clear and give the findings of fact and conclusions of law and the reasons why you either uphold or overturn the property appraiser in a fashion that everybody can understand, be it the petitioner, be it the property appraiser, or be it just some third party who just is reading it. They should walk away knowing what happened and why it happened. And so what you do is extremely important, and we appreciate what you do. Most of you are not doing this to make a lot of money and retire in Paris. Most of you are doing this because you feel that this is part of your professional obligation to try and participate in a process like this, and we do appreciate it. So just in 2021, we had 2,988 petitions filed, and we had 86 late filed petitions. Interestingly, a couple of years before the last day for petitions to be filed was the day that a hurricane struck and the city hall was closed, and we had hundreds of late filed petitions for obvious reasons that people could not get here. But the late filed petitions are considered, and assuming that the petitioner shows good cause why they filed late, they end up on your desk as well. But last year we had 86 late filed petitions out of the total of 2,988 petitions, and 215 of those petitions actually went to hearings before special magistrates. The next page, page 6, is a report that the law requires the Value Adjustment Board to publish each year in a newspaper of general circulation. That would be the Florida Times Union historically, and what it does is it identifies the members of the Value Adjustment Board. It identifies the number of petitions that were filed and the breakdown into category of those petitions and the outcome of those petitions, how many were withdrawn and how many cases was the property appraiser overturned and in how many cases was he upheld. And so this is the report the VAB files, and then the final column, the final two columns, one shows the dollar amount by which the assessment base was changed or reduced, and then translates that to the tax revenue that was lost as a result. So the VAB has to stand up to the public after we all do our work and say, this is what we did, and here was the outcome. This is the report that got published last year to that effect. Okay? I'm going to now, as we get to page 7 of our materials, I'm going to sort of turn my attention to just some logistics and procedures for the hearing itself. As hearings will again be held in room 305, third floor, VAB's office, their hearing room set up. Staff is there. We may have as many as 6 or 7 of you in there at the same time conducting hearings. You will be contacted by VAB staff, and please respond to them as quickly as you can when they reach out to you, so that because they do all this at random. We don't think it's appropriate to cherry pick special magistrates for certain things, and so we do as much of this at total random as we can. So they will reach out to you and then assign these petitions accordingly. When you arrive, the staff will orient you and show you how the desk is set up, where all the forms are, and because there's some new forms out there and then some old faithful forms that you're used to, this DR-485V will be there for your use as requested. And then also make sure that you understand how the recorder works. It is your sacred duty as a special magistrate to make sure that a proper record is kept of this hearing. And it's you must understand how the machine works. It's a Marantz recorder. It's a quality machine. Staff will be glad to explain it to you. If you have any questions, you can ask them, and they'll come in and they'll start it for you. And just leave it on until you're done, and you tell them to go turn it off if you need that kind of assistance. Otherwise, you can run it. I encourage you to just, once the recorder starts for a hearing, just to let it run. It's probably not a good idea to turn that recorder on and off during the hearing, unless you take, if you break for 30 minutes because somebody forgot something and you allow them a break to go back and get it, then. But if it's just a 2-minute, a 5-minute break to get some water or go to the bathroom, just let it run. But by all means, please make sure that recorder is on and a record is kept of every second of your hearing. And at the beginning of the hearing, please announce into the record that your name as special magistrate, the petition number, the parcel number, the date, and the time. That way, if somebody calls up later seeking a copy or we need to make a transcript, staff does not have to fish through these recordings and try and figure out which is which. Each one of these recordings must identify or should identify, just be thinking in your own mind how you can make it as easy as possible to retrieve these recordings later on should that be necessary. The rules, as you well know, the Department of Revenue has published Rule Chapter 12D9 in the Florida Administrative Code, which governs the the mechanics, the nuts and bolts, the procedures of the Value Adjustment Board. Rule, I'm just not going to cite to specific rules much. I will to some. But the rules require that before or at the start of the hearing, that this, unless it's waived by the parties, the special magistrate make an opening statement. Now, I much encourage you to make that opening statement. Please do not lightly ask parties to waive that opening statement or ask them if they will. Now, there's some situations where it would just be ridiculous to read the opening statement at the beginning of every hearing. And when Mr. Rudin's 50 hearings, you know, we're 50 petitions, you know, he's not going to do that. But in each case, we need to be sure that that opening statement's incorporated. And the reason for that is that the Department of Revenue wants you to explain clearly what your position is, that you're an impartial, qualified professional, and that you do not represent the property appraiser, that you do not represent a petitioner, that you are a finder of fact, that you will not consider evidence from outside the hearing. All of this needs to be explained to many of our petitioners. But at another level, when if there's a dispute later on over what went on in this hearing, let's say the Value Adjustment Board finds itself, they say they asked me to, they don't usually, but say they asked me to bring in a transcript of the hearing because they, I mean, bring in a recording of the hearing because they want to hear it themselves, or it ends up going to court. And while a court proceeding is a de novo or a brand new proceeding, it's possible that some of the VAB proceedings will become part of the court record. If you have made these announcements and gone through this script and explained everything, I think it gives those third parties a better perspective on how the petitioner and the property appraiser approached the hearing and what role everybody played. So it's, even though to you it probably gets to be pretty old hat having to do this script to each hearing participant, I think it is important. And I ask you to be very judicious before you just say, oh, you waive this, right? Let's do it. With that in mind, let's talk about the script beginning. It's in the script. This is before we get to the script, which is on page 9. Pages 7 and 8 is just an FYI. when the VAB staff sends out the notice of hearing, they also send out this informational sheet. And so if the petitioner has read it or they refer to it, this is information they will have received ahead of the hearing. I thought you would find it possibly of use. Getting to the script at page 9, I did not just sit down one day and say this would be a nice way to handle the opening of the hearing. I have tried to formulate this script to incorporate what the Department of Revenue says the special magistrate must announce and the various things that must be done at the hearing. So and I ask, I'm not going to go through it. You have done it before, but here it is again. Also, this script is also part of the materials that will be in the desk awaiting you when you arrive at the hearing, so that you can follow this. At the end of the script, beginning on page 13, for your reference, are copies of Florida Statute Section 194.301. And to the lawyers here, of course, much of what I'm going to be talking about is going to be focusing on valuation, but I'm going to provide you, all the lawyers, some sample information also. But some of this overlaps. But Section 194.301 and Section 193.011 are included as an appendage to the script, and you can see it on page 13, page 14. It just sort of takes Section 193.011, which are the eight factors the property appraiser is required to consider as part of the assessment process, and which you as a value special magistrate are required to make sure was considered. And so it just gives you those eight factors and a place to take notes if you would like to indicate what the property appraiser said and how you evaluated that. At the end of that, in underlined and in heavy type, it's in addition to the eight factors of Section 193.011, the statute reads that every petitioner is entitled to know the methodology that was used, the appraisal methodology that was used in reaching his assessment, and then it's part of your job to determine the appropriateness of that methodology. So there's a place here just for you to remind you that that's part of your assignment, and to also give you a place to make some notes. Page 15, in the event, for any reason, the hearing is continued, say it takes more time than has been anticipated, and you feel that the parties continue to make meaningful progress and are not just repeating themselves, and you think it's appropriate to continue the hearing, or if the parties for some reason agree that, an appraisal that or a survey that was ordered hadn't come in, and both sides agree that might be determinative or valuable, and they both think a continuance would be productive. Whatever reason, in your discretion as special magistrate, you determine that you're going to grant a continuance. Two things can happen. Everybody just leave, and you tell the staff that you've done a continuance, and that's technically okay, except it puts a big burden on the staff then to try and track everybody down and determine convenient dates when the special magistrate is available and everybody else is available. This can all be handled right at the table if you will use this form, page 15. You go to the staff. You've decided to grant a continuance. Go to the staff and inform them. They will tell you the next day that you're scheduled as a special magistrate, and maybe the next several days, and what days are available. And if you can secure from the petitioner and the property appraiser an agreement as to a particular date and time, then please fill this out, and everybody signs it, and then we now have set the continuance date, and staff doesn't have to do that. So this is a greatly expedites and assists the process. Please do use it. Please involve the staff if you decide to grant a continuance, and you certainly, that's part of your discretion. That's you as a quasi-judicial official may grant a continuance if you think the interest of justice will be served. Okay, when the hearing's over, we have on page 16 a form that we use here in Duval. It's the what now. I mean, petitioner's given you their evidence, and they want to know, okay, what now? Either you or staff can make this form available, and it gives sort of the timetables. It says that you will, within about 2 weeks, be providing your recommendation. That the recommendation goes to BAB staff. The attorney then reviews it as to legal form, so that by then, about 3 weeks since the hearing has elapsed, if you're following along with me on one and two, and then once number three, once I approve the form, then it's returned to VAB staff, and the petitioner and property appraiser each get copies of the recommendation. This obviously just answers questions that if they don't think to ask you, they're going to wish they asked you. So that's what this form is. Page 17, and after we talk about this, we'll take that first break. This is the DR 493 form that Mr. Holland filed with the Department of Revenue on June 22nd of this year. By statute, the property appraiser provides to the DOR each year a schedule of percentage reductions that they make to each comparable sale. I'm oversimplifying this, but I mean I think you to each sale to reflect the fact that there are costs of sale, deed stamps, title insurance, things like that, which are typically paid by the seller. And so the law recognizes, and the assessment process recognizes, that a seller's gross sales price does not represent what the seller actually receives after costs of sale. And so the assessed value is typically under 193.0118. You take the so-called sales price or just value or market value, as the case may be, and you reduce it by a cost of sale to take into account the section 193.0118 of Florida statutes. Almost every county that I'm aware just does a 15% across the board cost of sale reduction. This is the form, and it's very important that every time you receive evidence from anybody of comparable sales or of the subject property being sold, that you discuss if that property is being offered to you for consideration for the value of the subject, that you discuss whether or not that the property has been adjusted for cost of sale. And you need to reflect that you did, that was taken into account either by the property appraiser or by you if in some very strange reason the property appraiser didn't do it, then you need to pursue it. But I will be looking for that on all of these. But the go-to number is 15%, and if you go to Module 6 of the DOR training, there's an exhaustive discussion of costs of sale and what you should do in many situations. But here's the DR 493 for Duval County. It's now 9:58. I'm just going to have a short break, if you don't mind, just five minutes or so to stretch your legs, and then we'll crank up again. First thing out of the box.
Hey, how you doing?
And everybody,
I've been on.
You still over there?
How are you? Good. See you.
You were up early or up late?
Well, I was. You were up pretty late, really. I wake up.
Two appraisal review clients.
I had the worst night
7 days a week. But I was
I'm sorry, but I should have sent out a reminder.
Follow the appraisers. So.
Well, I forgot just you did send that out. And that I read it. But I forgot.
I should have remounted. But yeah,
it's
my
turn. Post-sale. As to...
Yes, sir. Can you please say again?
It was cost of sales.
Back in those days. Yes.
I would think so.
Yeah, it does.
That was just still.
I don't know which use code.
I'll read that whole thing. Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, there's a. And then we can ask Pamela Andrea, there is a cost of sale factor. You have to, you're required by 193.011 to consider the cost of sale, and I believe it's 15%.
Yeah, and then you have tangible personal properties installed value. It's not built on the street, you might say. And people don't address that too much, yeah.
Okay.
And that's what the petitioners do all the time.
Talking about the intro.
So we usually play on
Sunday.
Most of the time, in the
commercial.
I've been a member
here. We verbalize it, of course, when we're talking about it, but I don't know if that would be convenient for staff to say, okay.
Yeah, well, here's what Heather said. We don't have this. I mean, I think at some point, Bud sends a recommended decision in, and he inputs in one wants to have his evidence there, just in case. So staff, apparently, when they get that information, the DR-485V doesn't properly convey it, even though Bud put it in properly. It doesn't.
So can staff access the property appraiser's evidence that we uploaded to NXT?
Yeah, but I think that would be kind of a leap. I don't think they should do that. I think that's probably right. Sort of encroaching on this special magistrate. They have, let's say, on the record, the special magistrate. Well, it looks here like, you know, there's a typo here. You know, they correct it on the record. They wouldn't know.
I mean, you know, that's part of, aside from verbalizing, what's usually included.
Yeah, that would be, you know,
So they're looking for it. They don't. You could always call over to us and say,
"Yeah, it's definitely something that they can get if they forage it out." She's trying to avoid having to forage it out.
I get it.
Out.
Yeah.
But thanks for raising that.
You're right.
Get ready for another year. It'll be like really good.
All 300 of them.
Yeah.
How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, Robert.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
How are you?
Good to see you.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Hopefully, we're not
going to
have 50 for you.
If you haven't,
I have
had
other
patty,
like he said.
If you haven't signed in, would you please?
Pages.
Make sure everybody signs in from here on.
We did, yeah.
Maybe it's over there, but if everybody hadn't signed in, you would please. I would appreciate it.
Thank you.
I don't think there's ever seen any. No, there weren't. Because I've been doing this a long time up here.
I'm guessing it's because there's about to be a change to the property. And you want it to get all this back.
You would have a lot of them been here a long time. Okay. And that's on November ballot? March next year? Okay. Okay.
Okay, we'll come back to order if that's all right. Is Harry Gutherman among us? Okay, good. I couldn't see you behind the column, Harry. Pages 18 to 43 of your materials contain a memorandum to me, an email to me from Tiffany Pinkstaff, who's counsel to the property appraiser, and also contains an advisory memorandum dated March 25th, 2022 from Stephen Keller of DOR. Both of these address a method of computing, of deducting costs of sale in the income capitalization approach. DOR did this lengthy memorandum because it concluded that some counties were not doing it the way they thought it should be done. The property appraiser has adopted the DOR memorandum, but I thought it best to have Harry explain what they're going to do, and then if there's any questions or issues that you can ask the property appraiser directly. Now keep in mind that it's your job to make sure that the property appraiser correctly takes into account the costs of sale. And so here today, they're going to be telling you what their approach is going to be and how they propose to do it. But when it gets to the hearing, it's going to be up to you to determine it was done properly. So I just want to make sure that we're not losing that distinction. Harry, would you like to take the podium, sir? This is Mr. Harry Gutherman.
How does this work, Bill?
We'll just bang on it and see if it makes a big noise.
Hey, good afternoon. Again, Harry Gutherman with the Property Appraiser's Office. I was asked yesterday to give a brief overview of the effects here of this memo from the Department of Revenue from Bill and attorney here, Tiffany Pinkstaff. First, a brief backdrop about this memo. I spoke to Al Mobley back in, August of 2022, shortly after receiving a copy of this advisory memo from him in July of 2022. He stated the DOR was asked by the VAT attorney from Sarasota to provide some uniformity in applying the cost of sale adjustment and the income approach to value as a result of the previous year VAT decisions had inconsistency and application of this consideration. Specifically, The DOR was asked to provide guidance on the correct methods for making the cost of sale deductions in the income capitalization approach, including the correct methods for adjusting overall cap rates to effectuate the cost of sale deductions in the income approach, which is, that is taken verbatim at an advisory memorandum. Al stated that the department had reached out to many stakeholders from various counties, including the special magistrate, a special magistrate from Duval County, and their VAB attorney in the review process. He also reached out to all the major tax consultants in the state for feedback, and only one law firm from Miami area.
This mic is on.
Maybe if you just maybe
all the mics are on. There's got to be a volume control over here somewhere.
See if I'm standing farther away.
Can
you still hear if I if I'm standing here?
Yes.
Maybe I bill extra for that.
Yeah, just maybe. Thank you.
Yeah, this one's on.
Sorry for the malfunction. Following back where we were left off before, said he reached out to the major tax consultants in all the state for feedback. Only one law firm from Miami disagreeing with the final recommendations. However, when asked, failed to provide an alternative method on this. So, after reviewing this memorandum and its recommendations, our attorney Tiffany Pink staff communicated to Bill Jeter on August 11th via email of our intentions to implement Method 2 found on Exhibit 8 for the property subject to the upcoming 2022 VAB hearings. The PAO also stated we would not be modifying any of the trim notices given that they were already set to be mailed just days later. Okay. And in reviewing this, I've attempted to illustrate two of the takeaway examples, I think, that are changes from this memorandum that could affect the 2022 hearings. That's why I kind of provided this insert that I made last night for you, the appraiser, to follow along. If you look on the first half, first one, you see the top example. This is reflective of Method 1, Exhibit 8 in the memorandum, and this is primarily used by the petitioners. In arriving at the indicated value via the cost sale adjustment in this method, one must add the base cap rate with the effective tax rate, which equates to 85% of the millage. In this example, or 1.71% of the original actual millage of 1.26. The overall rate calculation, which I think I've highlighted in green there, shows the base cap at 6.5 plus the effective tax rate of 1.071 equates to an overall tax rate of 7.571. This overall rate is used to formulate the opinion of value prior to the below-the-line deduction as an aggregate 15% cost of sale. Okay. The other common one that's used, which the property appraiser prefers, is the one on the bottom half of the page. If you can see this, this is Method 2, Exhibit 8 example on the bottom half of this sheet is the PAO preferred method. In arriving at just value, one must divide the base cap rate by 0.85, then add the millage rate, which equates to a formula of, in this example, 6.5 divided by 0.85 plus the full millage of 1.26 equals an overall rate of 8.907 as outlined on the spreadsheet. As you can see from both performance, they reach the same value conclusion. However, the loading of the cap rate is our preferred method given the ease in implementing this consideration in mass. I'll also note the net lease performance. I think the PAO has a total of about 7,000 parcels on the income approach in Duval County, which a little over half of them are on net lease single tenant assumptions. There will be no changes in those assumptions, only the performers that have tax loads in it. Okay. In summary, as stated earlier, we will be addressing these during the changes during our reconstructed income performance in defense of our original value conclusions. Our hope in communicating this up front will lead to more clarification, you know, prior to the hearing starting. So, but from talking to Al Mosley, he's already actually presented all these to the tax reps. So this should be, they should be familiar with these. I don't know how many other counties are implementing for this year, but we're certainly planning on implementing these changes in defense of our original trail notices.
Harry, you said that because of the trim notices being mailed out imminently, there were no changes made to reflect your new policy. When you get to the hearing, if you're asked by the special magistrate or if you're giving this information yourself, will you be making the amendment at that time? In other words, you'll say the trim value was so-and-so, but because we have now implemented the DOR memorandum, the new value, if it's different, is so-and-so?
Yeah, typically what we do is we do an income pro forma to review our original trim, and if it exceeds it, the VAB magistrates ask us what those are. So we'll amend the cap rate on those correctly, no difference than we would change the expenses or the original base cap or anything else. So if we go in and we're just defending that pro forma, that same number, we'll give them the existing trim pro forma.
Okay, will the application of this DOR formula, is it going to cause your assessments to go up or down?
In just overall, looking at the, it favors the petitioner basically about 31 basis points. So it's about 0.25% in their favor as far as the cap rate. So the actual trim notices favor the petitioner.
The trim notice does?
Yes.
Okay, but as a practical matter, you're not going to come into the hearing and say, we're now applying the DOR method and therefore we're raising the assessment?
Absolutely not.
Okay. No. Do any of you, yes, Reg?
So typically when we come in and we look at these, the protest is based on the capitalization rate, and it's based on the base capitalization rate. And as you know, Ted Whitmer famously has this chart that shows that there can be 1,000 different cap rates depending on what's included in the cap rate. And for example, many of the tax reps and individuals, when they come in and they have a cap rate, they also want to take out reserves. And of course, we know that those reserves have probably already been calculated in the cap rate. So from the standpoint of, I agree with your process, number two is probably the easiest for mass appraisal. But when you come in and you're defending the assessment, many times the core issue is what the base cap rate is going to be. So will you be coming in with your information based on what the base cap rate is and not convoluting the issue with the load for the for the cost of sale?
As far as determining our base cap rates, we'll look to market sales, but we'll also look to investor surveys, which are forward-looking, okay? So, and all we're going to be doing is adding the effective tax rate to that forward-looking cap. So say an apartment, the forward-looking cap's 4.5%. Instead of adding the 1.75 to that, in theory, you would add 85% of the 1.75. That's how we would handle that.
And in order to establish a presumption of correctness, among other things, the property appraiser has to persuade the special magistrate by a preponderance of the evidence that he properly considered the eighth criterion, which is cost of sale. So it is going to be the burden of the property appraiser to explain to the special magistrate how the cost of sale was computed and how it was worked into the formula. And so that's up to the property appraiser, and it's up to the special magistrate to be sure that he or she understands what the property appraiser did, and you, part of your ruling is that the property appraiser did it in your estimate correctly.
Well, my point is that the petitioner may use a different method, and so it would be nice to have for you to go ahead and understand that, since you will have seen that evidence prior to the special magistrate seeing that evidence and helping us go back through and reconcile the differences in the capitalization rate.
Yeah, that, again, that's one of the things we're trying to get out in front, too, because most of the petitions that we get are going to have the first half of this, so they're going to be understating their values a little over 31, that, you know, the basis point spread difference. So we're going to be able to, when we send our reconstructive, we're going to communicate our implementation to the tax rep so that we'll be adjusting theirs. I mean, I have confidence that even though we're coming in favor of maybe 2% or more, they're going to make some adjustments to their income performance on the expense side of the base cap or the vacancy to make that, well, make up for that. But we certainly plan on adjusting any of the petitioner's performance to the magistrate to say, look, even if you agree everything that they've got here and you correct the capitalization rate the way it's supposed to be calculated, it will increase their value. But I assume once they get a hold of us doing this, whatever performance they provided us, they're going to say, well, that ain't our performing now, and they're going to make it in on the expense side or a higher cap rate, whichever way they choose. Anything else? Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Okay. Moving through the still in this orientation book on page 44, this shows you sample VAB recommended decision in the event the petitioner fails to appear at the hearing and has not asked for a good cause extension and has not said that he wants his evidence considered in his absence. In other words, what we fondly refer to as a no-show. You're going to be asked to prepare a recommended decision. The rules require that a recommended decision be prepared in that situation, one of the purposes is to preserve the petitioner's right to appeal to circuit court. So just FYI, if you're asked to prepare recommended decisions on no-show, I've put in a suggested sample, which I think covers the necessary points. Going to page 45, an analogous situation. If the special magistrate remands a value petition to the property appraiser with instructions, the property appraiser prepares a written remand review in which the property appraiser responds to the special magistrate's remand. When the property appraiser submits that written remand review to VAB staff, it is sent simultaneously to the special magistrate and to the petitioner. That starts a 25-day clock. During those 25 days, the petitioner may request a continuation hearing. He or she may waive continuation hearing, or they may do nothing. If they do nothing, or if they waive continuation hearing, then you are going to be asked by VAB staff to prepare a recommended decision accordingly. If, of course, they ask for a continuation hearing, then one will be scheduled, and you as the original special magistrate will be presiding at the continuation hearing, and all evidence from the prior hearing and any other new evidence presented at that time can be considered. This recommendation covers the scenario where the petitioner either did not ask for a continuation hearing or waived the right to a continuation hearing. Again, the wording the DOR prefers preserves for the petitioner the right to appeal to circuit court. This is some suggested language for that. If you look at, go to where, see where it says therefore, and then look at the paragraph that precedes that, I have added language that says the property appraiser's remand review assertions may or may not be legally sufficient. That's sort of to cover. It sort of doesn't really matter because whether they were legally sufficient or not, if the petitioner does not ask for that continuation hearing, case closed, and the special magistrate is going to, you know, make a recommendation based on that written remand review. But this language is in there. In the event the petitioner disagreed with the property appraiser but just didn't bother to file, we don't want to pronounce that the VAB has favored the written remand review. It's just a procedural step required by the board. Beginning at page 46 and continuing through 81 are a series of recommended decisions. The first one is a remand, and then the others are actual recommended decisions. With the last one is an attorney recommended decision. The intervening ones are valuation decisions. Now, some of them, they're all here for a reason, but I'm just going to tell you generally why they're here. I'm not going to go through each of these recommended decisions, but every year people ask if I'll give them examples of what I have found to be appropriate findings of fact, conclusions of law, and reasons, and these are they. The remand decision at page 46 remanded a petition to the property appraiser with instructions to consider the income approach on a piece of property. And I think it's important that you choose your words carefully when you do this remand. In a situation where the special magistrate feels the property appraiser has not shown that they considered one of the required factors, it's appropriate to remand the petition to the property appraiser with instructions that they consider that factor. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the property appraiser must develop the factor. There's a difference. The statute requires that the property appraiser consider all eight factors and apply an appropriate appraisal methodology. The statute does not require that the property appraiser develop all the methodologies. There are scenarios where particular pieces of property or particular property owners do not lend themselves to a methodology or a factor. That means the property appraiser considers the factor, but the property appraiser, he or she, must persuade you that they properly considered it. And if they just didn't, then you need to find that they didn't establish a presumption of correctness. If they just didn't consider a factor at all, and if there's not evidence in the record from which you can reach a value, then you must remand it to the property appraiser with instructions. This remand, beginning at page 46, I think appropriately handles that situation. It directs the property appraiser to consider the income approach. It doesn't necessarily direct him to develop it. The recommended decision beginning at page 49 addresses a scenario where on page 51, if you look at the second paragraph below the findings of fact heading, In that situation, the special magistrate found that the property appraiser placed no reliance on the cost method, but the property appraiser satisfied himself that the special magistrate satisfied himself that the property appraiser had correctly considered the cost approach and expressed his reasons why that was. So that's a situation where the property appraiser said, look, cost approach, it was not relied on here, but we thought about it, and here's why we didn't apply it. I mean, I think the property appraiser has a responsibility to do that, and the special magistrate has a responsibility to make sure that they considered it, but not necessarily apply it. And that needs to show up in the recommended decision with reasons and with conclusions. I thought this, that's why I included this recommended decision as an example of how the special magistrate articulated that it had been considered but not applied. Beginning at page 52 is just a recommended decision that I thought was particularly well and comprehensively written and that you would benefit from reading. Then, and the same is true with the recommendation beginning at page 56. The last, the next to last recommendation, beginning at page 59, addresses in some detail a situation in which a petitioner sought to increase the assessed value on property that they had once owned but sold, and they were seeking to utilize that increase to enhance or increase the amount of portability that they could move to their next property. The property appraiser and the value adjustment board and I are dialoguing about whether this type of petition should even get to the special magistrate in the first place, and whether or not standing can be resolved separately, and I'm taking the position presently, and I think you're going to see these coming to you. I think that if a petitioner initially files their petition and they are the owner and it's otherwise a complete and proper petition, then I believe the way the rules are written, due process requires that that petitioner receive a hearing before a special magistrate. Even if it is alleged that they've somehow lost their standing between the time the petition was filed and the hearing occurring. There are those who disagree with me, and that dialogue continues, but this particular recommendation is one that was heard by a special magistrate. All issues were presented, whether or not the petitioner had legal standing or whether they had lost it as a result of their sale of the property, and also the valuation issues were considered. As you will see in this particular case, special magistrate found that the petitioner had lost his legal standing when he sold the property, and therefore the valuation question was not resolved, although the evidence had been presented. This includes as an attachment a case in St. John's County that addressed the same situation, and it's as yet unresolved in the courts whether or not the sale of property is across the board a loss of standing for the petitioner. In other words, any time ever that a petitioner sells property, they've lost standing. I don't think that's been resolved yet. I think that it hadn't been gone to the Supreme Court, but the courts seem to be agreeing on cases such as this Kubala case where a seller of homestead property who subsequently seeks to go back and increase the assessed value of the property to aid him in his him or her in his portability transfer. That is not going to fly, but that's a loss of standing. Whether or not that's across the board is as yet unresolved, and I'm hoping it will be resolved, so we have some instructions on that. But anyway, I think you'll find the Kubala recommendation on page 59 interesting as far as some legal points are concerned. On page 79 is an attorney special magistrate recommended decision that was prepared last year. I thought... I've moved to page 79, which actually the cover sheet is at page 78, and then the write-up begins at page 79. This is just a recommended decision that was prepared by our attorney special magistrate. And I thought well written. I thought it had good details, and is a good example of a recommended decision. So that gets us through the orientation package. I think there's more time that could be spent, but I think you can decide how much time you want to spend on what subjects. I'll be more than happy to talk to you about any of these things. I'd like to then, if there are no questions at this point, I'd like to sort of turn my attention to module number 6 in the BAB Special Magistrate Training. I don't know how y'all do it. I literally print all of these modules, and then I write in them and put little stickies and do all these things. I find it's quite useful. Those of you who are more computer reliant will just be doing it from your screen. But I'm going to go through 6, which is module 6 is the administrative review of real property just valuations. Again, some of this overlaps, and you don't have that in front of you. This is just my copy. I decided not to make a copy of 6 because you've all will either have or will be taking the training. I encourage you to, if nothing else, print the module that pertains to what you do, the TPP, the attorney, or the evaluation. Module 6 would be your choice if you're a real property evaluation, a property appraiser, special magistrate. But there's some interesting dialogue in module 6 or text that I just wanted to cover, and then and I'm going to go through that, and then we'll have a question and answer period, and then if we'll adjourn. We might conceivably finish a little bit early. But as I go through number 6, there's a lot of emphasis by the DOR about how the world changed when the statute was amended in 2009, but apparently nobody noticed. You know, that it's like the tree that fell in the proverbial forest. The DOR published a lot of stuff, and the legislature did some amendments, and apparently no one noticed. And the DOR a year or so ago decided they were going to do what I call some we really mean it materials. And a lot of module 6 is what I call the DOR's we really mean it about how these value petitions should be heard and how you should consider them. So I'm going to just hit some of those we really mean it phrases that are in here. And in it refers at its beginning to the amendments that were made in 2009 to section 194.301, which changed the burden of proof so that the property appraiser is not entitled to a presumption. It didn't change the burden of proof. It changed the procedure for obtaining a presumption of correctness. I misspoke. It changed the procedure for the property appraisers obtaining a presumption of correctness, which in the past they had just enjoyed. Just walking into the hearing room, the property appraiser had a presumption of correctness. Beginning in 2009, the property appraiser does not receive a presumption of correctness unless they demonstrate by a preponderance of evidence that they have properly considered each of the eight factors in section 193.011 and applied an appropriate appraisal methodology. If they achieve the presumption of correctness, their assessment can be overturned by the petitioner if the petitioner shows by a preponderance of evidence that either the assessment does not represent the just value of the property or that the assessment was arrived at in some sort of arbitrary and capricious manner inconsistent with the way the property appraiser treats other similar properties in the county. So that's new. And the way the training treats this is that the property appraiser goes first, and the rule, not just the training, but the rule. And the property appraiser undertakes to establish a presumption of correctness. If the property appraiser does not establish a presumption of correctness, it's the special magistrate's responsibility to then review the record, and if there is substantive appropriate evidence in the record from which the special magistrate can reach a value, then the special magistrate is required to reach a value and to overturn the property appraiser. But if the property appraiser, or if there is not sufficient evidence in the record, then the property appraiser receives a remand from the special magistrate with instructions directed at the concerns of the special magistrate. The remand needs to be clear and concise. The property appraiser needs to know exactly what you want him or her to do, and you need to be disciplined in the way you remand and the way you word those remands so that everybody can look at your remand and say, okay, that's what he wanted or she wanted us to do, okay? One second here, please. Okay. The Department of Revenue emphasizes throughout Module 6 that the 2009 amendments changed the dynamics so that the job of the property appraiser is made a little more difficult, you know, because they don't have that presumption of correctness. They have to establish it, and it is the in the module it says the boards and special magistrates must follow the provisions of law on the administrative review of assessments, and there's no question but that you have the right as a special magistrate, if you feel that the assessment should be reduced, that is something you may do, and you may do it by considering the entirety of the evidence, and you will then you don't have to rely, you don't have to agree with one side or the other. You may arrive at your own independent conclusion of what the value should be. going, I'm sorry to be fumbling, but I'm just trying to skip some things that I think we've covered already. One thing to talk about that I'd like to talk about is CAMA, the computer-assisted mass appraisal. The reason the petitioner is there is because he or she disagrees with the outcome of CAMA. CAMA is how their assessment, I assume in 99 and 99/100 percent of the time, was generated. CAMA resulted in the trim notice that they got. And so that's why we're here. So it's not an appropriate defense to the assessment for the property appraiser to simply say, well, this CAMA, we rely on CAMA. We ran CAMA. It's an appropriate appraisal methodology, which it is, but we ran CAMA, and that's it includes cost, and it includes income, and it includes comparable sales. That's not sufficient to establish a presumption of correctness. At your hearing, the property appraiser must independently persuade you that in this process, that each of those eight factors was considered, and each petitioner is entitled to know what methodology was used to arrive at their value. And you need to reach a conclusion on that, too. When you either uphold or overturn the property appraiser, as part of that recommendation, you need to have articulated what methodology was applied and whether you agree with it or not and why. CAMA, without question, is an appropriate appraisal methodology. The property appraiser is absolutely doing his job when he buys an appropriate software and inputs data to it and then relies for purposes of trim on the data produced by CAMA. That said, the DOR and I think statisticians recognize, and I'm just going to read from page 122 of Module 6, it is implicit in mass appraisal that even when properly specified and calibrated mass appraisal models are used, some individual value conclusions will not meet standards of reasonableness, consistency, and accuracy. And so what that's saying is that, of course, when you have 370,000 results from an algorithm or software, some of those aren't going to be right. Some of those may come in below what the assessed value should be, and we may not hear about those. Some will come in above, and we will hear about some of those, maybe. But just saying, just relying on CAMA is not sufficient to establish a presumption of correctness. The statute requires that the property appraiser show you that they considered all eight of those factors and applied an appropriate methodology. Again, the property appraiser is not required to develop all three approaches, but they must show that they considered it, and they must explain to you why they rejected or failed to work up a particular approach. And you must indicate in your findings of fact and conclusions of law the same thing. The petitioner is entitled to know that the law was followed. And that puts an additional burden on the property appraiser, unquestionably. I've seen many a situation where and I don't quarrel with this, but where the property appraiser will say, well, we didn't say it's a high-rise condominium fronting on the ocean. And they say, we applied only the comparable sales method. We didn't consider the income approach because there just really wasn't any data for us to find. And besides, people don't buy these condos to rent. They buy them for, and they're valued in the marketplace based on their value. Not quarreling with that as a general concept, but I am saying that that's not the burden that the legislature has handed the property appraiser. The property appraiser has got to persuade you with reference to each particular property that he properly considered all those factors. For example, on page 123, the training says that it's the responsibility of the appraiser to collect, analyze, and maintain legal, physical, and economic data as necessary for credible valuations that comply with applicable law. And then on at line 15, avoid cursory consideration of 193.011 factors. Correctly apply the factors needed for a credible and lawful just valuation and develop professionally accepted reasons for not applying any factor not applied. In other words, if you're going to apply it, fine. If you're not going to apply it, be prepared to say why. And you cannot just make a conclusionary statement that nobody buys these properties for income purposes. That is conclusionary, and I don't think it's acceptable. I think you have to come up with a consideration of income. You have to provide facts, and you have to seek out the data to indicate that you properly considered the income from this property. Now, that's going to vary from property to property, and it's up to you as special magistrate. You decide, you know, if the property appraiser has shown you by a preponderance of evidence that they correctly considered the evidence, and they may persuade you of that. They may persuade you that for this particular high-rise condominium or a particular subdivision, that the income approach is not applicable. But just to say that we don't use the income approach in these developments, I believe, is insufficient. It's just as an aside, Jacksonville finds itself, at least in February of this year, among the top five metro areas in the United States where investors bought the highest share of homes. This, according to News 4 Jax, there's the cities, top five cities in the United States, of which Jacksonville was ranked fourth, are Atlanta, Charlotte, Miami, Jacksonville, and Phoenix. Orlando was number six, with the highest percentage of properties being purchased by investors. Now, an investor may or may not be considering, and I would assume they are, what they're later on going to be able to sell this property for. I'm going to hold it for a certain time period, and I'm going to sell it later on at a profit. But if in the interim they're also going to be renting it, that has to be taken into account. I'm not saying that means you would apply the income approach or not, but that has to be considered. And, you know, just to say that a house in a single-family subdivision, there's no reason to even look at the income, I think these articles say otherwise. I mean, we had, I think in 2021, over 20% of the properties sold in Jacksonville were investor properties. So, and the DOR emphasizes all throughout this Module 6 that this just has to be done. Any decision to include or exclude the factors on page 125 of Module 6 must include explanations and reasons addressing each of the valuation approaches and each of the applicable legal criteria regarding what was actually done and how and why in adjusting the just value. This isn't me. This is the DOR. Must provide lawfully and professionally accepted explanations and reasons for not applying a legal criterion or not applying an appraisal approach. Must avoid misleading statements, conclusory statements, and superseded case law. So conclude, they just, this is the DOR saying you must require this. On page 126, just valuation evidence, including evidence intended to show the property appraiser's compliance with each of the section 193.011 factors, this is underscored by the DOR, must be real, material, pertinent, and relevant evidence as opposed to ethereal, metaphysical, speculative, theoretical, or hypothetical, and it must have definite probative value. So this quoting the Singh v. Walt Disney case, which was much in our minds last year. So, and then they quote some trial court decisions where on page 127, the trial court rejected the appellant's appraisal because it found that their appraisal method failed to take into consideration all the factors set forth in section 193.011. Failure to consider one or more of the factors set forth in section 193.011 is sufficient to invalidate an appraisal done by this was tax assessor at the time. I think I've made my point here that I'm going to urge you to please ask questions as a special magistrate to satisfy yourself if the property appraiser doesn't provide you a detailed list and detailed evidence. You must ask, did you consider this methodology? If so, what did you gather from that consideration? And if not, why not? And you need to then include that in your recommendation. Your recommendations need to be detailed and they need to contain that information. They should track the statute. Just if the statute says that they had to consider those factors and that methodology, you need to say that they considered those factors and applied an appropriate methodology and what that methodology was. It's sort of a new day has dawned, but it dawned in 2009, and the DOR is now kind of rubbing our faces in it. And if you disagree with me, I encourage you to look at Module 6 and see what the DOR says. I'm going to depart now, happily, from Module 6 and hit a few other things, and I really think we're coming to an end. I'll hit some random points. When you're talking about comparable sales, and if an issue is raised as to whether a sale is qualified or not qualified, if it is asserted that a sale is not qualified, I think you need to inquire, well, why? On what basis is it not qualified? Sometimes you're going to find it's shown in the property appraiser's database is unqualified, but the person testifying before you won't have been the one who made that determination and may not know why that determination was made. And it's up to you to find out. And if there's no evidence presented as to why that sale is unqualified and the other, then maybe it's going to change the way you look at it and change whether you consider it as an appropriate comparable sale yourself in reaching your conclusion. Is It's 11 o'clock, and I would take a break, except I think I've covered just the points I wanted to emphasize with y'all. I'd like to open the floor up to y'all. Are there areas that we haven't discussed that you would like to? I want to talk to the attorneys just to tell you that I do have a whole portfolio of past recommended decisions by attorneys on various subjects, and I'll circulate that to all three of you just to be sure you have them just for reference purposes, and I'm also available. The primary difference between what I've been talking about here, as much of what I've been talking about for valuation purposes, is property appraisers establishing a presumption of correctness in valuation matters, which they have to do really before they can go further. There is no presumption of correctness in the matters you'll be considering. The petitioner simply has the burden of proof to show that the property appraiser's either classification or exemption denial is improper. Now, I'll qualify that by saying that there are requirements that the property appraiser have sent out an appropriate notice by July 1 telling the petitioner that they've lost their exemption or their exemption is denied, and there are requirements as to the form and substance of those notices. And if those notices fall short in form or substance, then the game over. You stop right there, and if you make a finding that the property appraiser did not properly send that notice or articulate what's required in that notice, then you just stop right there, and it's over. But that's a significant difference between exemptions, classifications, and the other things attorneys handle, and valuation things. But all of these we can talk about, and I always feel like I give the attorneys kind of short shrift in this, but I hope you have benefited some by things that overlap here with the valuation special magistrates. Does anybody have anything they want to talk about or gripes from last year or suggestions? The floor is open. Audie.
Could I ask one question, Harry, on the property appraiser side? On qualified sales, when y'all say they're non-qualified, could you just
Is your microphone on?
Could you just give us a sort of a list of the things that would make it a non-qualified sale?
Well, the non-qualification sale.
Harry, are you do you have a mic? Let me bring you this.
Harry Guthrie with the property appraiser. Yeah, there's plenty of examples that we would use qualified sales that might be not qualified for the Department of Revenue, meaning like other item sales. I mean, you might have a sale of a restaurant in the parking lot. The Department of Revenue, they ask you to disqualify that sale, which includes other parcels, but it's sold as an economic unit, we'll still use that as a viable sale.
Mm-hmm. All right, so for instance, let's say because this happens to us a lot in appraising. Families will come to us and say, hey, we want to sell the property, but we want to sell it to a family member. We'd like you to establish the correct market value, and then that's what we'll sell it for. So would that be an automatic disqualification as far as being a qualified sale because it's from one family member to another family member?
Typically, that would be because it wouldn't be on the open market for other bidders. Mm-hmm. But I'm not saying that it might not be reflected in the market, but we can go into a subdivision and find tons of sales and still exclude that one.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay.
Following that up just a little bit, Audie, I mean, the property appraiser is going to designate within his database certain sales that for whatever reason he deems to be unqualified. Maybe they were foreclosures or REOs. Maybe they were family transfers. Maybe it was a result of a divorce, and so it was a distressed sale. And those may all be very valid reasons why a particular comparable sale would not be useful in your hearing. But my point, and what I ask you to just consider, is just the mere assertion by the property appraiser or by a petitioner, for that matter, that a sale is unqualified is not enough. I mean, you need to know why. Because the reason the hearing's going on to begin with is that the petitioner disagrees with the property appraiser. And so if the property appraiser has proclaimed a particular sale to be unqualified, he may well be right, but he needs to be able to explain why it is. So let's assume a situation where your petitioner shows up and presents a comparable sale and asks you to use it in the valuation of the subject. And if the property appraiser says, well, we have that sale in our database, but it's unqualified, I think you need to say, well, why is it unqualified? And if it's just and if they don't know, then that's a problem. I mean, I think you then have to, you'll have to decide how much weight you're going to put on that comparable yourself. That's part of your authority as a special magistrate, but I don't think that just the mere assertion by the property appraiser that it's not a qualified sale justifies you just throwing it out unless the property appraiser can explain himself. I mean, there are certain situations where I'm making this up, so again, I don't want to suggest this goes on anywhere, but let's say the property appraiser has a policy of excluding every REO or every let's just leave it at that. They have a policy that any REO they treat as an unqualified sale. Well, that may be a generally good concept, but it may not. A particular REO might have been listed with a real estate agent on the market, exposed to the marketplace for months, and it may have sold at fair market value. Because while in some cases REOs, after they've been written off, the owner just ditches them in the market just because they don't want to own property. But in some cases, the owners say, well, no, I plan to sell this and sell it for its fair market value. So that would be a reason why you would want to know why this particular REO was unqualified. And so my point is this: the property appraiser may or may not be justified in deeming a particular sale unqualified, but it's up to you as a special magistrate to pursue a line of questioning as best you can to see if you can determine why it's unqualified, and then you reach your own decision whether you're going to weigh it, and if so, how much weight you're going to give it. Okay. Sir?
Can I mention something just for clarification?
Again,
statewide. There is no in-house PAO, potential REO, you know, disqualification. So just wanted to let you know that the modules that you're applying to, we have our set of rules and guidelines that we're from the department, and it's state driven. We don't have the authority to just deviate and do an in-house rule, so to speak. So I just wanted to make that on the record.
Why don't you leave that back here, Bill? Why don't you just leave it back here?
like to?
Yeah, real quick. I just want to
Devic, Chief Appraiser.
Do you mind coming up to the...
I just want to say from a procedural standpoint, the property appraiser's office, our intent this year is if the tax rep or the property owner appears for the hearing, we will appear for the hearing, but otherwise we're going to operate from the telephone, which I suspect that most of the tax reps are going to as well, which as far as, you know, that saves them on travel and airfare and room, board, all that. So I think they're going to continue to do phone hearings as well, and since that's the vast, vast, vast majority of our petitions, we're going to continue to operate as we're in COVID, I guess you would say. So I just want to make sure everybody was aware of that.
Okay, and that's I think, fine. I think we're prepared for all of that. How's it working out, if I may ask the special magistrates, are there difficulties that you think we could work on and make it the process better for you in connection with the telephonic hearings? Or is it work? Are you comfortable? Because the in our, just for the record, I know you, everybody knows this, but in our system, the special, and by rule, the special magistrate is present in the hearing room even for a telephonic hearing. It's open to the public. A member of the public could join in on the conference call if they chose, or they could come to the hearing room even though both parties were not at the hearing room. And if the petitioner chooses to come to the hearing, and I think you just said you would, in that
we
case,
would, yes,
be there too, but you wouldn't have to. And so anyway, what is there anything, I mean, let us know if there's something you think we can do better on those telephonic hearings or on anything else. Sir?
Just a question. Are they truly telephonic hearings, like on the phone, or are you using Zoom or some video platform?
Phone. So truly telephonic.
I wasn't aware of any Zoom.
Yes, sir, we're not.
No, it's just, it's very, it's like 1950.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, any movement to go to video?
Well, the VAB itself, you know, when we meet in council chambers, has the advantage of really state-of-the-art equipment. But when we're up in our offices, we don't. And, I mean, we just have telephones. And the staff is very good. They get they set it up on speaker. They, you know, we do have, you know, multi-party calling, so we can conference call everybody in. But that's essentially what it is. It's just your telephone. You could do the same thing with your iPhone. You know, just set it on the table and call in a bunch of people and put it on speaker. That's what we do. And you, as special magistrate, are going to have that little Marantz recorder. You have to make sure staff will assist with that it's close enough to the phone to pick up all that. And maybe a day will come when we have, you know, they have a television studio in Miami-Dade that, I mean, Amazon would probably be glad to have. It's wonderful. It just runs beautifully. Thanks, Keith.
Yes, sir.
Bill.
We will be scheduling all the hearings as in-person unless the petitioner requests otherwise, which a lot of them probably will request telephone, but we're scheduling them as in-person. Instead of defaulting to the telephone like we did the past 2 years.
Okay, just for the record, Grace English from VAB staff said all hearings are going to be scheduled as if they are in person. If someone requests a telephonic hearing, then we will do that. Okay.
So Bill, obviously there's a problem with a telephonic hearing. Because any supplemental evidence, documentary evidence, we can't get, you know, I guess they can email it in the past. Rebuttal evidence, they're going to have to email that. There's some problems procedurally with the telephonic hearing. Since the parties are taking on that benefit of having a telephonic hearing, is it also their are they taking on the liability that they're not going to be, that the magistrate may not be able to timely get evidence in and consider that evidence? And particularly since we don't see the parties, their demeanor, it's very difficult to gauge that.
Yeah, I lament that too, because part of what you do is look people in the eye and determine whether they're being credible and whether you believe them, because there are certain. I mean, for example, we had a Greenbelt, a highly contested agricultural classification case, and nobody could look at the petitioner's face when they were saying what they intended in good faith to be doing, and what they had done and why they had done it. And that's just the way it worked out. But I mean, that particular one occurs to me that it might have been useful to be able to look at them and decide whether they were credible or not credible. And the same is true, though, in every hearing. The rules do contemplate a situation where at some point in the hearing, the parties agree that an additional piece of evidence would be useful. And there's a provision in there where you can continue the hearing to a certain date, and that date is a deadline by which whoever's supposed to furnish additional information must do so. And then either it can be continued as simply a continuance to receive that information, or it could be continued as an instance where you're going to receive the information and have further testimony. But let's say the issue is the square footage of a piece of property, and the petitioner disputes the property appraiser's computation and says, I've got a survey at home that shows all this. And the property appraiser says, look, if you've got a survey that shows this, and if it's, we'll go along with it, or we'll allow, we'll allow you to, we won't object if you want to submit that survey. As special magistrate, you could say, I'm going to continue the hearing, for 3 weeks. You send me the survey, and I'll look at it. And then after that, I'm going to, without further testimony, because everyone in my hypothetical has consented to this, then I'm going to do my recommendation, taking the survey into account. You can do that. That's contemplated by the rules. And the same would be true, with the hypothetical I think you described. You can either just plain continue the hearing and everybody comes back, or you can limit the continuation to simply the furnishing of additional evidence, provided everybody stipulates to that. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to working with everybody this year. I hope you can call me 24/7. I'm really happy to talk about this sort of thing, and I appreciate everybody's attention. And Grace and Jonathan, or do you have anything else that you want to say? Okay, and thanks to the property appraiser for being here.
Yeah.
Thank
you. I want to see if Parker wants to meet us somewhere.
Yeah, I think Kelly and Parker.
Right. Oh, yeah. We are live.
I'm sorry you have to deal with another year with this guy.
I think I can do it in my
I read that right up here.
He's showing off. Oh, no, don't go critiquing.
Oh, buddy, you didn't write that. I know that. You don't know half those words.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, some of that lingo might have been Jeter.
Yeah. He was the brains behind it. I just wrote a little bit here and there.
So, Monday, I've got a post up.
What's the name of the restaurant? No, I haven't. I have not been there.
They asked me to Clay. So I looked online.
I need a 26. I'm just going to put it down.
You'll call me.
The woman says thank you.
Guys, pleasure.
Yeah, see, I got 15. I would intervene. So we can just meet for lunch.
I didn't think about the wall.
Okay, if you eat.
So yeah, I thought it came up with me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've been there. But,
I heard
noon.
Right after Easter.
I'm John Bill. John Bill G. Thanks for coming.
I appreciate it.
You guys, I look forward to working with you. And I've got a big portfolio of prior recommendations. I'll probably get them to scan them and send them to you. And I know as much as you've done, you may want to contribute to our library.
I think I did in my application.
We all like to plagiarize each other.
So. I'll take a look at it. I sent it over my application. The thing I wanted to say, and I didn't think it would be appropriate per se.
Thanks, bud.
We're good, Bill. Thank you.
While you were doing your thing, I've had a couple of situations in some counties where it would be good to have the Sheriff Deputy's cloaks.
We have that facility here.
Here in the building?
Yeah, there's security, there's armed security here for that matter. Because we have occasionally had people come up.
That's what you do
us for
everything.
And if you feel any reason at any time, staff can probably have somebody up there in a matter of a minute.
Yeah, well, my thing always is better to have it before, so to speak. Not to tell you, because I'm new to the county, but it'd be theoretically if they were.
Thank you. I look forward to working with you.
If they were around.
Back here.
Hey John, if you don't mind shooting me a text or an email when you get assigned, if you're okay with it, I'd like to sit in on the first couple of hearings.
You still at the beach?
Be quiet as a little mouse. Usually what I do when I sit in on hearings is I don't sit in. I'm outside the door because I find that when I'm in there, people start asking me questions. It's your hearing. But I'd like to be there just to be an assistant. So let me know when you get scheduled. Okay?
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's just something to think about.
We don't do it.
I'll just send an email.
I'll see you.
If I get a sign, I'll just send a reminder email. but that's something that I would like to have considered. I have.
Okay, well, let me see if I understand. You want to be there all the time, or just
when? Yeah, when,
yeah, we can take
you know, at least in the area, however you all do it.
Okay, well, let me.
It definitely helps to me. Because things happen quickly.
Okay, I'm going to. I'm glad that you clarified that, and I'll certainly take that up. I don't want
this is something to think about.
I don't. Well, I am thinking about it. I don't want you to be uncomfortable.
I can tell you what happened.
It's probably not what you're expecting.
It was over in the scandal.
Got weird. I was trying to figure out.
Put the hearing on hold.
So.
Security and then
the
county sheriff came in.
I don't have
that on the record.